students. I have a terrific husband and our marriage is happy and a fulfilling one.
Why are you writing? Next.
Next. But there is one thing that over the years has continued to drive me nuts. When I finish...
Is it Celtic music? Because I have that problem.
Oh, God. That would
ladies. Welcome to Hey You Know It. My name is Jaquetta Sotmar, and I'm here with my co-host...
Katie Kazmere. Hey You Know It is a podcast that tells you how it is or how it should be.
You can listen to Hey You Know It on iTunes, a new episode every Monday.
And here they are, Jaquetta and Katie.
I will introduce this because I'm the person who asked for it, if you don't mind. So many moons ago, Katie was nice enough to bring in a story that she wrote as a young person.
Yes.
And in this story, she talks about, you know, they say write what you know. So she wrote about life on the front lines.
Yeah.
In World War II?
I believe so. Yeah, this was a contest in school. I think I was a sophomore.
Okay.
And it was an English class assignment. We had to come up with a creative story. And, yeah, it's all about the war.
The war.
You know, because I know all about warfare as a 15-year-old woman.
And she read a piece of the story on the show before, and I just could not stop thinking about it. And it's just...
I use every word that I know in my vocabulary, and I put them all in here.
Everything that you'd ever... Every style. It is a pastiche
of
everything. And it's quite interesting, actually.
So, basically, there are these the young men, as I'd like to say, they were kids, no exaggeration there, and only 20 of them, at least. And they sat... looking like frightened children with toy guns, but the guns were as real as the impending doom that spread. Wait a minute, wait for it. It spread viscously around them.
Wow, I love this. And keep in mind, I'm not making fun of this because when I go back and look at my writing, I see very similar.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Similar.
This is the thing, you know, we make fun of everybody's writing on
here.
And part of it is because we're writers too.
Yes.
And we've been there. And this is my crown jewel.
I will bring in to counter this at some point. I wrote a short play about people living their entire lives on treadmills that I thought was just very existentialist.
Yeah.
And I took everything I'd ever read before and put it into this.
Okay.
So now we have for you, what's the title of the story?
This is In the Still of the Night.
We present to you, In the Still of the Night, a short story by young Katie Kazmere.
Yes, yes, yes. So here we are. The soldiers are in the trenches.
Yes.
And there are rats. The rats aren't... We're not ordinary rodents that soldiers like Jackson could see crawling in the tenements of his home back in the city.
Well, by the way, Jackson is a young African-American man.
Yeah, and I have a multicultural cast,
yes.
By the way.
And each one is a pastiche of what that character could be.
Yes. They were gargantuan with evil dispositions that craved warm meat.
The rats?
Yes.
So it's not bad enough that these young men have been sent to the trenches. There's man-eating rats there who have beef.
Yeah, when they crawled over the cold cadavers lying in the field and the rims of the trenches.
The cadavers, even. Not corpses.
Yeah.
The cadavers. Someone from a medical institution just threw them out there for the rats. No less.
The logical solution would be to shoot and kill, but they were dangerously low on ammunition as well as food, clothing, and medical supplies. It was as if they were left there forgotten.
Dun, dun.
Yes, the bullets had to be saved for the reasons they were lying in that.
Did you
greasy,
write yes?
Yeah.
Yes.
In that greasy, smelly dirt hole. They were there to destroy the enemy no matter what the cost. Jackson. Jackson grunted and climbed up. He could not deal with this anymore.
He climbed up the trunk. He's like, man... This is some bullshit. Oh my God, so we'll try to get through another paragraph if we can.
It seems so long ago he was going out with a gang in the city, cruising around and drinking beer.
In the city?
Yeah, that was all just 3 months ago, and now he felt like an old man. The biggest fight he ever got into, it was over who got what girl among his friends. Now he fought for his life and sanity.
Wow. Is he the main character, Jackson?
I think so.
Okay.
Now, Winston and Long sat huddled in the corner, battling the chill in their bones.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, all right. They have other issues. They're cold.
This and terror were the only forces that made them stay this close.
Wow.
Are you sure? Are you sure? A shower, something that they had taken for granted every day, was now a luxury that they could only dream of. Layers of dirt, sweat, and filthy clothes, combined with the lack of bathroom facilities and rotting garbage, created hellish odors that...
This is all in these trenches. I'm expecting, what, is there a bodega down here? Like, what else is down here? Is there a bad part of the trenches? The red light district?
Yes. Hellish odors that were embedded in their every pore.
Wow. You went for it.
I did. Oh, how they maliciously hated O'Connor, sitting snug in the corner.
That bastard. How they hated O'Connor.
Yeah. After their lieutenant was blown to pieces, he automatically assumed charge. Every direction he took seemed to be wrong. They were losing more and more men every day. Tonight, it was...
I'm afraid, is it a Kaylee? Like, what happens?
Tonight it was Goldberg who noticed the...
Oh, yes, because a Jewish person hasn't appeared yet. So we have this black guy, we have an Irish guy, we have
Winston and Long.
So it's maybe Jackson, a German and an O'Connor. English guy.
So Goldberg.
And now Goldberg.
Who noticed the leveling of the sandbags. The rats' constant trampling, clawing, and nibbling tore apart the bags. And the sand, with growing speed, was spilling forth, killing a vital element of protection.
Wow. So it's really, they're at war mostly with vermin.
Yeah.
Yeah, the elements.
Yes. Without this, they would be ambushed with no chance of survival. Panic rose within the men, and they rushed to O'Connor to see if there was any chance of a new supply of equipment that would save their lives.
Wow.
A nervous wreck and burdened with decision, O'Connor snapped and told them they had to save themselves by improvisation.
Yes, and?
If they were really men.
They'd come up with something.
Racking their brains, they came to a few conclusions that would not hold water with their leader.
You didn't leave out anything.
No.
Right, nothing left on the table.
They thought of piling the sand back up, but that was futile because it was very easily to collapse.
Yeah.
A wall of dirt was heavily considered.
Wow. Your teacher must have had a field day with this in the teacher's lounge. They probably, like, light a smoke, everybody, and have a seat.
But the amount of bags needed to break and stack staple chunks of frozen earth was inconceivable. This, due to their weak state and depleted frames, also the lack of a bulldozer.
Wow. All right, we'll do one more paragraph. This is awesome.
Filled with anxiety, Jackson, Long, Winston, and Goldberg could not see the point O'Connor was driving at. They had to make use of what they had in great supply, the bodies of their dead friends.
No, you did not.
Sure. All stacked up nice.
Because the rats would
neat.
Not eat those.
Yeah. The thought of the rats clamoring, wiggling, and nesting in the innards of the humans was appalling, not to mention the squelches the bullets made as they shot deep into the rotting meat. Violent protests spewed forth from the soldiers. Then suddenly, a lookout sighted the enemy advancing. There was no time to waste.
Thank goodness.
We'll leave it there.
And with that, we conclude this episode's portion of...
In the
Still of the Night. Wow. That is fantastic.
I am crying because I... Laughing because I... had not read it in so long.
I encourage anyone who has work from high school or college to go back and read it. It is some fun. I'll put it that way.
Yeah.
It's definitely, you know, you're learning on the job.
Ugh.
My goodness. That is rough. So they're forced to use the bodies that are still around for some reason.
Yeah, yeah.
And then they're in a large supply or something like that? There's lots of them.
Yes.
So, I guess we can look forward to when they stack them up.
Yeah.
To keep out the enemy and the rats.
Yeah.
Wow. What made you write this story? I don't, you know what? Whatever.
Who knows?
Who knows?
I was reading a lot of Stephen King.
Okay.
All right. So, it was the idea of like a bad situation made worse by these giant rats that nobody anticipated scene.
Okay. So these are actually giant rats. I just thought you said they were large rats. These are like rats very of unusual big. Size.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow. All right. I like it.
They got the four R's.
All right, so I found this on the internet. It says, news site makes readers answer questions to prove they understand the story before posting comments.
Oh.
I think this is a great idea.
This is fantastic.
Comes from one of my favorite countries, Norway. The creators also hope that the quiz that they're going to give people will force people to calm down before they post. So people trying to comment on articles will now be forced to prove that they understand what it's about. That's at least what the NRK, Norwegian Broadcasters website, will present people with when they want to leave comments. A quiz is going to come up. This is a beta site. A quiz is going to come up, and you have to answer some multiple choice factual questions about the article. And the idea is to make sure that before you leave your comment, that you understand what the article actually said and that everybody is on the same page about what happened in the article. They also hope that forcing people to take 15 seconds to answer the questions will calm them down before they start making ridiculous comments. Because if you've ever read the comment section of a lot of papers, it's like, it's just ridiculous bullshit. It's like, did you read the article? You can't even have a discussion
people
with somebody.
People are not reading articles. No. They read the title.
Yep. And then they go for it. Using their, you know, their biases or whatever they are, liberal, conservative, whatever.
Yeah.
They just go for it. I think it's interesting because when the ability to comment first came out, they were actually not bad. Mm-hmm. Like, it was like people were trying to be insightful and there was dialogue, and now it's just deteriorated right into nothingness. It said that the 15-second calm down period for answering the questions is supposed to stop people from leaving angry comments. Stories that use the quiz the quiz will have three short multiple choice questions, and you have to give the correct response or you cannot leave a comment.
Okay.
So, for instance, people might have to correctly answer what an acronym in the story stands for. That makes sense.
Okay. Yes.
You know, the creators of the tool, for the moment is used on NKR Beta, the broadcaster's tech page, they hope it will ensure that everyone knows what they're talking about before they actually start talking about it. Quote, we thought we should do our part and try to make sure that people are on the same page before they comment, said the journalist. If everyone can agree then that what the article says, then they have a much better basis for commenting on it. This makes sense to me. This is fine. The extra time should also force people to think. If you spend 15 seconds on it, maybe during those 15 seconds, it takes the edge off your rant.
Okay.
Right? Most of NKR Beta has developed a dedicated following about people who talk and comment positively on the articles. So this makes sense. These are people like us who want to read informed comments and want to leave informed comments, right? It kind of automatically weeds out people who are just like, I hate blacks.
Yeah.
It's like, really? Because this article was about, like, wolves.
Yeah.
Or whatever.
And, their opportunity to vent and rage about something.
People who are always, well, it's not so much now. A little bit you see it from some, like, really ardent Trump supporters. But it used to be when Obama was in office, no matter what the article was, it's like, this is Obama's fault. It's like, really?
That was the joke. Then it turned out everything was Obama's
fault. Yeah, it has nothing to do with Obama. Did you read the article? Mm-hmm. So the problem is that they haven't been having issues with inappropriate comments on their site in Norway. It's when other sites pick up the story and then, or send the links out, and then they get other people's asinine readerships that are, like, leaving nasty comments. So that's their concern.
Yeah.
Their concern is like, hey, we have this story. We know who our readers are. They're commenting sensitively on this. But when other people are able to come to our site, the comments then, the section looks ridiculous. So they're trying to have it. Many sites have gotten rid of comments altogether, arguing that, there's really no point to it.
There really is no point. It used to be
It's informed, you know?
It was a thing to get people to interact and to...
I think it started off positively.
Yeah, it did start off positive, and not a lot of people commented.
Nope.
You really had to put some thought into what you were saying because you realized that everybody could see it.
Well, I used to, at first, when the comments came out for publications like that, you know, for online publications like The Guardian and things like that, where the articles were a little bit longer, sometimes I would comment, Or read other people's comments that I thought were kind of informed. And it was fun mm-hmm. at the beginning because you had to identify who you were. Like, you had to, like, sign in and do all this stuff. Now it seems like any crackpot should just run on
and start commenting. You could get on there and throw up a link to, like, yeah. buy my supplements.
Yeah, exactly. Or, like, doomsday preppers, get ready.
Yeah.
This is, you know, one of the four horses of the apocalypse. Obama.
Yeah.
Whatever it is.
And then misogyny. Yes,
misogyny, racism, misogyny.
And then two people get into this big war.
Yes, they over and they're something. Not even talking about the article anymore. Yeah. I do like it when I read some things online, mm-hmm. and they're usually things that you have to subscribe to or sign into. Sometimes the comments are really good. So I was reading something about, like, the Affordable Care Act. And then a couple of doctors came on and had some dialogue about mm-hmm. it. I'm like, okay, that's interesting. But then just rando, like, yeah, I don't like my insurance. It's like, well, mm-hmm. so?
So, nobody likes
No that. One likes their insurance. it says here, Google announced last week, for instance, that it had built an artificially intelligent tool. I think this is translated. Artificial intelligence tool that can read through comments and identify whether or not they are toxic. Can I get that app in my real life? And just point it at people.
I know.
When right? they're saying some shit, so I can tell if it's toxic or not. I don't know. Very interesting. The first comment is, I can't believe the government made this law to make people pass a test before they are allowed to read the news.
I can read it. You just can't say anything.
But once again,
yeah,
proving that they have not read the article.
Oh my God.
So this is a beta thing on NRK. That's the Norwegian Broadcasters website. I have never been to their website, but I do listen to NRK Jazz. And it's really good.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, it's wow. free. So,
well, I like that. I like the idea that yeah. you have to be informed in order to speak up about this.
You should be able to answer just some basic factual questions, mm-hmm. you know, about the article so you can go on your rant about doomsday
yeah.
and Obama right. or whatever it is. Supplements. right. Vaccinations.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
Yep. It's all over the place. Okay. What do you have?
I have advice on advice.
All right. Advice on advice is a segment that we do where we find advice on the internet that stinks.
And it's unqualified.
And we improve upon it by giving our advice on that advice, hence advice on advice. And I see Prudence.
Prudence, yes.
Is this new Prude or old Prude?
I think it's old Prude.
Okay, good. Classic Prudence.
Classic Prudy. All right. Dear Prudence, I have a terrific husband and our marriage is happy and a fulfilling one.
Why are you writing? Next.
Next. But there is one thing that over the years has continued to drive me nuts. When I finish...
Is it Celtic music? Because I have that problem.
Oh, God. That would
Ladies.
Do it.
Anyway.
When I finish dinner and I call my husband to the table, he stalls. Sometimes it takes him 15 minutes to finally come to the table. Mm-hmm. I put a lot of effort into making tasty meals, and it irritates me that he tells me he's hungry before I cook, but when it's ready, he takes his good old time getting to the table.
Does he get a 5-minute warning for this? Or he's got to be there right away.
I've expressed my frustration several times in the past, but ultimately he doesn't adjust his behavior. I know this is a fairly minor annoyance, but he's the one who suffers the cold dinner. But
he
I also
doesn't
think,
care. He doesn't
but,
care.
But I also think it's an easy thing to change. Should I just accept that he's going to be slow to the table? For the record, he does like my cooking, so he's not dragging feet out of dread. Signed, annoyed chef.
I mean, okay. Let me just say, as I'm going to put my wife hat for mm-hmm. a minute, this is something that used to bother me with my husband. And then I thought about how stupid I was being and how ridiculous the fact that I was saying, okay, dinner's ready. And then I expect him to drop what he's doing mm-hmm. and run to the table at that minute. What difference does it make? You can reheat it.
Yeah.
I mean, if he's going to take that long of a time, I'd say the dinner's ready. I'll eat.
Yeah.
If I'm hungry. And then we can, you know, I can sit here with you while you're eating. But yeah, it was a thing at first when I was like living with Greg. I'm like, hey, I made some food. Hurry up. I would never do that to a friend
yeah.
or a relative. I don't know what it was. I think you just got to let it go. Or tell him 15 minutes early that it's ready.
Yeah. Right?
Yeah.
Say it's ready.
And say then it's ready. And then.
Is he late for everything, though?
It doesn't sound like he's late for everything, though. Yeah. I don't know. Okay, so let's see.
Oh, but then again, if you are slaving away cooking dinner
mm-hmm.
Over a hot stove and doing the whole thing, they should be like, okay, yes.
They should be ready.
They should be ready. You know that it's going to take, you could say to the chef, how long does this?
That's what I'm saying. That's why I say give the call ahead of time. Yeah. So like I grew up in a house with just a single mom. You grew up with a mm-hmm. whole family. How did it go in your family when the meal was ready? Were you guys there like waiting for it? Were you called and then you had X amount of time to get, like how did it? go down.
Well, our mother would say, you know, dinner's going to be ready at 6 o'clock.
Okay, so okay. She gave you a time.
So it's going to be around, so we knew around 6 because you can't time things. And then she'd be like, all right, come over here and set the table to one okay. of us. Go tell your siblings to wash up.
So there, you get there was like a warning. Like not
this morning.
Yeah, warning period. You get like there's a run-up time to it.
Yeah. But then when she was like, okay, everybody sit down, you had to come and sit down.
Yeah. Well, that makes sense because there's a lot of you. It's like if you guys are eating at 6, but then, you know, say two of you eating at 6, someone trickles in at 6:15, another person trickles in 5 minutes later, this meal is going to go on forever and your mom wants to clean up and be done with it.
Yeah.
But so I think she could do that, what your mom did. Like, it's 15 minutes before the meal is ready. Like, hey, can you help me get the table ready? Can you do this and do that? Then everything is done. He has no choice but to sit down.
Yeah.
He's already there.
Yeah, so, it's going to be ready at 6.
Yeah.
Ish. So just be ready at in this window. And do something that you could just put down and walk away from.
Exactly.
You don't have to be, like, you know, gluing a model together at that time.
Nope. All right, let's see what... the advice is.
Okay. Is it possible your husband is more than unusually absent-minded and truly doesn't realize how much this bothers you? If that's the case, telling him how his behavior makes you feel, not just frustrated, but as if he doesn't care about the time you spent cooking for him might be helpful.
Oops, we forgot that one. How about have a conversation?
Yeah.
We jump right to the subterfuge.
Yeah.
We got a plan.
Yeah. I put so much effort into making dinner for us. I value the time we spend together sharing a meal, and it makes me feel devalued and disrespected when you drag your feet every night to have dinner with me.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
Yeah.
Verbatim.
Might help jolt him into awareness.
Yeah. Could, yeah. He might not know.
You could also simply stop making him dinner, putting a lot of effort into a daily ritual.
The nuclear option.
Yeah.
You're on your own, B.
Brings you unending frustration has got to be awfully tiring. Why don't you cook for you? Why can't he cook for himself? Why, for that matter, can't he cook for the two of you? I have no doubt that you would show him the courtesy of being on time to the table.
You would think that, but... this experiment has played out completely differently in my home.
So what happened?
On time, because Greg likes to cook. And when he has cooked, it's the same thing. He's like, dinner's ready. I'm like, yeah, good guy. I'm doing this thing.
Yeah.
And that's when I stopped nagging him about it.
Yeah.
Because I realized that, like, yeah, I was doing that too.
Mm.
A warning period probably would have eliminated that.
Yeah.
But you know, when you're doing, even if you're just doing something like typing an email, if someone's like, dinner's ready, like, I just got to finish this. And then more time passes than you think. So you say 5 minutes, but really, is it 5 minutes?
Yeah.
You know? All right. It's not bad advice.
It's not bad advice at all. And
I guess my advice on this advice is take it. Take this advice.
It just reminded me once. I was living in Colorado, and I had just, it was right after college, and my family came to visit me. And
I heard this story.
I lived in a pretty big house, and I had a couple of roommates, and one was an older woman. She was in her 40s. At the time.
An old woman.
I was 20, and then there were two other guys in their late 20s.
Mm-hmm. What was she doing? Another story.
Yeah, right. And so my family came, and one of my other friends came over and cooked this fantastic Mexican dinner
nice.
For us.
For your whole family?
For my whole family.
Wow.
As like a, you know, hello, welcome, nice meeting you.
Yeah.
Really nice.
Welcome to Colorado. Here's a chimichanga.
Yeah. But my family also brought a videotape of a home movie that they had made, and then we were watching it.
Really?
Yes. It was like a funny movie that my brothers made, and they put it
together. Oh, it's like, actually, so this isn't just like, you know, stuff they're doing. That They wrote something.
Yeah. They edited.
An amateur film.
Yes.
Not a home movie, in my mind.
Amateur. It was, and it was a funny thing, and we were watching it, and my friend said, dinner's ready. And we were like, okay, just a minute. And we kept watching the movie.
She flipped the table.
And the other roommate came in and was like, Katie, she just worked all afternoon in the kitchen making dinner for your family. Get up and get to the table. And I was like, oh, I guess we should.
But also, couldn't she have, I would have been like, I'm just going to come in and watch this. If your shit gets cold, heat it up yourselves.
Yeah.
Not a big deal.
Yeah.
I don't know. All right. I like that one.
Hey, you know it is a free podcast, free of charge, FOC.
Free as a bird, free falling even. Well, it's free for listeners.
We put a lot of hard work into this.
Editing and online hosting is frankly thirsty work. It gets pretty dry in this studio. And you know we love a tasteful white wine. If you like our style, consider buying the gal a drink. We've added a PayPal donation button to heyyouknowit.com so you can show us some love with a one-time or recurring donation to cover a little something from the vine.
For $5, you'll be hooking us up with a happy hour glass of tasteful white wine, a 4-ounce pour. For a 10 spot, we can split a bottle of wine from the bodega across the street. For $15, we can kick it with a jug, because who are we kidding? For $25, you'll be making our dreams come true with a box of tasteful white wine concealed with a Mylar skin. Box of wine.
Those of you who are paying attention to what's been going on with NASA will know that the Cassini spacecraft, which has been ringing Saturn for 13 years, is no more. Did you hear about this?
I have no idea. You mentioned something about this. So I was like, I don't know.
You're like,
going
who
on.
NASA?
Cassini. Is that from Game of Thrones?
It was the final chapter of an amazing mission. Cassini's discovery of ocean worlds at Titan and Enceladus changed everything, shaking our views to the core about surprising places to search for potential life beyond Earth. This is from Thomas Z. I can't pronounce his last name. Is the Associate Administrator for NASA's Science Mission Directorate. That sounds so cool. Mm-hmm. Science Mission Directorate.
Yes.
I'd like to be in that organization. So it was a Cassini spacecraft. As I said, it's been going around 13 years around Saturn. And in its final mission, it just flung itself right into it. Because we wanted to get as close as we possibly could to see what was going on. The images are available if you go to NASA's website. They're incredible. It looks like something you would see in Star Trek or Star Wars. Like,
really?
It's hard to... It's so beautiful and otherworldly that it's hard to reconcile the fact that this is real. These are real images. These are not doctored.
Wow.
I mean, they're not CG'd in any way, but they look incredible. It rivals anything I've ever seen in science fiction movies. A very, very beautiful sight. They lost contact with the spacecraft at 4:55 a.m. on the very last day, and you can see the final moments of it.
Oh,
so and the people were sad. Like, the people who'd worked on the spaceship, they had, like, their heads bowed. This was, like, a huge thing, a huge mission.
And
them.
It was the end.
And it was the end.
They knew it wasn't coming back.
Yeah. The final plunge brings to a close a series of 22 weekly grand finale dives between Saturn and its ring. So it just kept diving in and out, diving in and out. And the last dive was into oblivion. This has never been attempted before by any spacecraft.
I can't wait to see this now.
Yeah, the Cassini operation team did an absolutely stellar job. So they're done. You know, they've been working on this for, like, decades. Guiding the spacecraft to a noble end, from designing the trajectory 7 years ago, they put this trajectory together, to navigating through 22 nail-biting plunges between Saturn and its rings.
Wow.
Isn't it fascinating? This is a crack-shot group of scientists and engineers that scripted a fitting end to a great mission. What a way to go. Truly a blaze of glory.
Ooh.
So over the next couple of weeks, they're going to be...
Did they find Matt Damon out there?
No.
Floating around.
I need more roles. the data is going to be coming in the next couple of weeks still, and they're going to be looking at it, analyzing it. So there's going to be new information all the time. They're not really sure what it is that they're going to see. They said Cassini launched in 1997. From Cape Canaveral. I kind of remember a little bit.
Before the internet, before the smartphones.
They do all these long-term missions, and these are a lot of things, like, when we were younger, they were like, we're doing this voyage. We're like, man, whatever.
Yeah.
Like, in 13 years, who's going to care?
Yeah.
So it left from Cape Canaveral in Florida and arrived in Saturn in 2004. So left in 97, arrived in 2004. NASA extended the mission twice, first for 2 years and 7. The second mission provided dozens of flybys of the moons of Saturn that are icy. So remember, this is they're looking for planets that may be able to sustain life or may have sustained life.
Yes, because
we got to get up out of here.
Yeah.
Because we're destroying this.
Yeah.
So that's basically...
We've got to find another one to destroy.
Yeah, we can find a new planet. So the spacecraft is gone, but the data, we still have it, about the planet, about Saturn, about its atmosphere, about the rings and the moon. So they said for decades to come, as they analyze all this data, mm-hmm. they're going to find out more and more information. So you can go to saturn.jpl.nasa.gov/grand finale to see the final imagery.
Wow.
Before this thing went down.
I can't wait to
Pretty
see
cool.
This. That is very
yeah,
cool.
Yeah, I don't know very much about space travel. I'm going to be honest. It's not one of the areas that I know very much about at all. But I've been to a couple of lectures, and it's fascinating. Like, there's just so much to know and so much to consider. Mm-hmm. And I feel like as a society, we don't spend enough time and money on this kind of stuff. Like, mm-hmm. this is the interesting stuff. Mm-hmm. Right? This is, like, it's inspiring, right, to think about what might be out there.
And we have no idea.
And meanwhile, we're squabbling over building a wall.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, there's awesome stuff out there that we should be putting our time and effort into.
And right? Yeah, we need to definitely pull back.
Yes.
And take a bigger, a wider view of things. And say,
so our best technology right now is probably killing people and surveillance. But really, it should be about exploration. Mm-hmm. Like, we could put it to good use. I don't know. So yeah, this was pretty interesting. And just check out NASA's site in general. I know they're not getting as much money as they used to, but they're doing amazing stuff out there. You know?
Wow.
I thought it was pretty cool. All right, what do you have?
Oh, boy.
Yay, NASA.
Yes.
We have props. It's not just Tang and dried ice cream, people.
But the idea that it launched in 1997
and
how much the world has changed since then. Last night I happened to just, I had the TV on and an old episode of King of Queens came on.
I have never seen a King of Queens. Did you watch it when it came on?
I did a little bit, but I
was, it's from the early 90s?
Yeah, and just
so Seinfeld era, same time.
Or a little bit later than that, but there were no cell phones, and you forget watching these older sitcoms, you know, how
people had to make a plan to stick to it.
Yeah, and they had the plot was the husband and wife wanted to find new best friends to hang out with, another couple to hang out with on Saturday nights.
Okay, that was their problem.
That was their problem, because their one couple they were friends with found another couple.
Jeez.
So they needed a new couple, and they were like, it's hard to try to find a good couple that, you know, the four of you can get along with together.
So this is, the premise of this show is what, they're blue-collar, white family?
Yeah.
Living in Queens.
Yeah.
So I guess fast forward now, they'd be like, what, Trump supporters on opioids?
Probably.
Would be the sitcom?
Probably.
And it would be HBO.
Yeah.
It'd be 42 minutes long.
Yeah.
No commercials, prestige drama.
Yeah. And so they found another couple who introduced them to another couple that they liked, but they didn't get that couple's phone number. So how are they going to get the phone number?
How are they going to ever contact them?
Yeah. And they had to invite the other couple over and get their names and last name and then look it up in the phone book.
Wow.
And they weren't listed. So what did they do? They have to go into the woman's bag to get her address book out of her
bag. Of course. Yeah, they have to, you know, a theft.
Yeah.
You know.
To get her
address
book.
Criminal hijinks.
And that's the only way they could find this phone number is to do it that way. Isn't that amazing?
I remember having an address book that my mom bought me, like a fancy one from Hallmark that had like pages you could put in. And I had it for years. Mm-hmm. But because of the kind of lifestyle that I led, I think I was always around my friends, and no one really had phones.
Yeah.
So, like, when I lived my first apartment on my own, when I lived in Seattle, I didn't have a phone in my apartment because I wasn't in town long enough. I didn't have a good enough, you know, background or credit history. Remember, to get a phone line back when you used to have to pay all the time for every call was difficult.
Right.
And as students, you had to, like, put down $100. You had to show, you have to have a parent co-sign it to get a phone.
Yes, a phone line. And you were charged different rates depending on how far it was. There was local.
Yep.
There was local long distance.
Yep.
And long distance.
Long distance.
And then international.
It's bizarre to me because the phone company was, you know, was a monopoly. One of the most inefficient things ever. They charge people crazy amounts of money. Now, using their phones, no problem.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, you even someone who is down on their luck, say you are, you know, living in a shelter, you can still have a phone.
Yeah.
Right? But back then, I remember as a working person, I was like, how am I going to get this phone?
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, what am I going to do? I had to wait like 6 hours in the apartment for the guy to come by and do all that. Yeah.
And test it. Mm-hmm. And it's like, yep, it's working. The line is working.
It's like, great.
And then you shared that one line with whoever lived in the place.
There was also a fear that someone would come and use the phone and call like Germany or something.
Yes. Yeah, right. Anyone could pick it up and dial a number and you'd be charged for it.
I remember going to someone's house and staying with them and they were always like, yeah, don't make any long distance phone calls. And I'm like, well, I have to call home.
Mm.
You know what I mean? Like, I'm far away from them. Like, what do you do?
Right.
Or people being on the phone, was it 1-800 or 1-700, 1-900 or whatever, those like chat lines.
Oh, the 900 is the chat line.
Yeah.
800 is a free number.
800 is free. Yeah. 900 is the chat number. People would be using the phone, fall asleep. And then they would get these crazy phone bills of $1,000 as if it actually cost money. You know what I mean?
Yeah, right, to call
someone for that long. It didn't. They were just charging you because you had nothing else to go with.
Yes.
Now it seems ridiculous.
Yes. But even go back a little bit further with phones.
That you had to dial?
Not only dialing, but there used to be just one phone. If you lived in the city, there was one phone on your floor.
Yeah, that's right.
And just watch an old Honeymooners episode.
Yeah.
And you'll hear the other people in the apartments off screen going, got a call, and like you would just shout down to your neighbor, you got a phone call.
I remember in college and in boarding school, there was a booth on the hall.
Nice.
And then a couple weeks ago, I was in a small town upstate, and there was an old diner, and they had a booth. And I remember thinking, it's so great. I went and sat in it and had my picture taken.
Oh.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Because it had been forever. The phone, I mean, phone booths was like a thing.
We used to have, we used to sit in phone booths.
Yeah, they were awesome. We had, great, I got some privacy in here. There's a little, like, seat in here.
Yeah.
I'm going to call.
Yeah.
In any case, so here we, what? Is this a Tales from Dirk Campfire?
Yes.
We're going to stroll back up memory lane to the future. And we're going to do a Tales from Dirk Campfire. This is a segment where we find tales on the internet of the paranormal, ghost stories, fake lore, folklore, urban legends.
Scary stuff.
And we retell them here around the digital campfire. So please gather around.
Gather around, listeners. This one is called Her Feet Were Swinging.
Ooh.
And the state was, the person is from Louisiana.
Okay, well, so, that says it all.
Yes.
Thank you.
I was up late working on my computer. I am a 39-year-old male, and I have always thought...
Male what? I was a 39-year-old male. I'm like, what, cougar? A male duck? You know what I mean? You're a man, right?
Yeah, I always thought I saw shadow figures out of my peripheral vision, but I always assumed it was my eyes playing tricks on me.
Mm-hmm.
Until a couple of months ago.
When?
I moved into a new home about 2 years ago. The shadow figures were quite active in my peripheral, especially in my kitchen, as a matter of fact. Only in my kitchen and never at night. And I never realized that till now.
Huh.
Anyway, I still assumed it was just peripheral.
Like just now, while he's...
yes.
While this male is writing it. Okay.
It's a lot of peripheral going on.
Yeah,
here
it
too.
Is. Maybe turn your head.
Yeah. Until I was up late about 2 a.m. getting some work done on my computer. Okay. 45 minutes or so had gone by. I wasn't sleepy or tired, nor did my eyes burn from the computer screen. Yeah, he said,
okay.
It's a male.
Yeah. He's getting literary with it.
I saw her out of the corner of my eye sitting on my printer swinging her feet. She had a hooded cloak.
So sitting on a printer?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm like, whoa.
What kind of printer? I'm thinking, is this a little one or like an odd? You know what I mean?
Yeah, this is why I like the story.
Okay.
I didn't immediately turn... thinking she would disappear because I thought my eyes were playing tricks on me.
Yeah, we got that.
I couldn't see any definition or glowing eyes or anything, just a silhouette of a little girl or woman or whatever. But I'm sure, a female. Before turning...
I was going to say, he's going to throw female in here.
Yeah,
he's got to.
He did.
Because he's a male.
He's a male, and that was a female.
Female, or whatever.
You need to know that.
Yeah.
Before turning to look at her while her feet were swinging next to me, oh yes, my printer is about a foot away from my computer.
Thank you. Well, he doesn't describe the printer?
Yeah.
Oh, wait.
I said, I see you. She didn't move or stop swinging her feet until I looked directly at her. I looked directly at her hood where her face would be. She stopped swinging her feet but did not disappear promptly. She stayed visual for about 8 seconds and we were just looking at each other.
Is this guy in the military? Visual.
I started to get upset because I'm a very private person.
That's why he's upset. Bitch, you in my space. Right. I have visual on you. Visual confirmation.
I immediately got up and turned on the light. She was already gone, though. So I thought. I was extremely upset.
Because his privacy had been invaded by a female.
Yeah, sitting on his printer.
Yeah.
It took me about 15 minutes, 2 cold glasses of water, and a sit down on my bed.
What? Cold? I've never heard that as a response. Are you freaked out? Let me give you a cold glass of water.
2, please. Because I'm really freaked
out.
So I started back working on my computer with the light on now. About 10 minutes in, the feet were swinging again out of my peripheral. I said, what do you want? Not looking at her this time because now I'm freaked out. I put the attitude in there.
Yeah.
By the way. As I said that, another hooded cloak figure was moving on my right side.
Okay, now I'm out. It sounded like she went and got a friend.
Yeah.
No.
I immediately turned to look at it, and it was directly on my shoulder, like it was either reading what I was typing or staring up at me.
What?
I wanted to say I could feel it breathing on my shoulder like a temperature change, but I'm not 100% sure about that because they both disappeared when I looked at it. They were playing with me that night because I immediately saved my work, turned my computer off, and left the light on, and turned on the TV. And I watched a comedy to laugh and change my mood.
I would have gone to a hotel.
How I figured they were playing because about an hour later, when I got up to go and get a snack in the same area,
there was a note that said, "You got played." B.
Poof. The same area where the second figure was on my shoulder. It was running next to me outside of my room.
What?
I have seen them again.
Wait.
Oh, no, wait.
It was running next to him?
Yeah.
Was he running?
He was walking and it was little, so it was running next to
him. Oh.
Yeah.
It was that small?
Well, it's sitting on a printer. How big is a printer? I don't have a giant printer.
You've seen our printer. It's huge.
But if something is sitting on it, dangling its feet.
Maybe like a 7-year-old? 5-year-old?
No, I'm thinking like a little figure.
I'm thinking it's a printer. It's on. I've invented this entire office now. It's sitting on top of something, right? On his desk or something.
Yeah.
And then the thing is on top of that. So maybe a small child.
I'm not even thinking that big. I'm thinking like a little tiny thing because it's sitting on his shoulder.
Like Tokolosh style? Oh, it was sitting on his shoulder.
A little one was sitting on his shoulder.
Oh, so this thing is like a couple of apples high.
Yeah.
A Smurf.
It's like a foot high.
Okay, a foot high. I got you. Okay.
You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like
yeah.
If you're sitting on where the
yeah, and your
printer,
feet are
your feet are dangling.
All right, got it. So the feet are about what, 3 inches long? The leg.
Yeah. So it's like a little thing with a hood.
Ooh.
Sitting there.
Sounds like an evil brownie.
Yeah. Right.
Oof. Okay.
I haven't seen them again, but I never felt threatened or harmed in it.
Female brownie.
In any way, while they were there, I felt like they were either amused by me, wanted to really know if I could see them, or maybe studying me. I have no clue, but it still freaks me out to this day.
That's scary.
I also stopped seeing the quick shadowy swishes behind me in my peripheral in the kitchen after that night. Maybe they were saying goodbye or something.
Oh, God. Jesus Christ. How many times have we told them not to do that?
Listeners, we're in our Hey You Know It studio. Which has a glass window that is out on the rest of the studio.
And here we are talking about seeing things in the peripheral when we see in our peripherals a black clad figure waving its hands.
Yeah.
Whereupon we look over to see it's one of the people who works here who's telling us we have 10 minutes.
Yeah.
But we've asked them not to because we get creeped out.
Yeah.
It's the right thing for them to do normally when there's people practicing in here. But like when there's two scaredy cats doing a podcast, no. No.
Oh, God almighty.
And we have, okay. He's gone.
Okay. So we're back to here in this.
And it was a male.
It was a male. Maybe they were saying goodbye or something. I really want to know what in the world or out of this world these entities are and what they want. They're always maybe about 3 feet or so tall.
Okay.
Okay. About the height of an average 7-year-old. Huh.
Oh, wow.
You're right.
Okay.
You were actually right. If anybody reads this and can give me any information or theory on the specifics of the situation, please leave a comment. But 3 feet tall, and it was on his shoulder.
That's why I'm confused.
Yeah.
It said it was with looking over his shoulder or looking up at him.
Going back to this.
That's what I thought it said. My prognosis is that this is,
I thought it was tiny because he says, another hooded cloak figure was moving on my right side. I immediately turned to look at it, and it was directly on my shoulder, like it was either reading what I was typing or staring at me.
I think that he used the wrong preposition.
Okay.
He phrased it improperly. I think, because if it's a 7-year-old child, you're seated. It's
looking
chin
over.
Is at the same height as your shoulder.
Okay, got it.
Looking
got
over
it,
your
got
shoulder.
It.
I mean, what do you think this is, though? He's saying he was seeing shadow people. I think that's one thing. This is not shadow person.
It's not a shadow
because
person.
Because he was able to look at it.
And it was swinging feet.
And it was swinging
its
feet.
Which is not,
yeah.
It's
usually
not a typical movement. Of
with
it.
A shadow person, the moment you look to see it, like full on, it disappears. You can't see it anymore.
And he had a feminine vibe.
Yeah.
That he got from it. And there was a hood. And there was...
So what do you think?
You said brownie.
I was thinking it's some kind of a brownie, but it's not. A brownie is not ghost-like or a phantom in this way.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm thinking that it is. These are spirits, maybe, of children that have something to do with either what he was working on or are bound to that room in some way.
Children's.
Yeah. Parents. Maybe okay. Children. I mean, because they clearly are linked to each other. There's two children dressed similarly.
But why are they in their hoods?
That's the style of clothing that they used to have.
Okay.
From whenever they.
All right.
Whenever they, you know. Didn't you have any hooded, like, cape or anything like that when you were a kid?
No.
I had, like, a little hooded cape. It was, like, kind of like a, you know, a 70s, 80s kind of thing.
Well, you were fancy.
I was fancy.
You had that.
So, yes, maybe these are little fancy kids from back in the day. I don't know. It was interesting.
It was weird.
A little bit creepy.
Yeah.
Thank you for listening to Hey You Know It. Stay in touch with us during the week. Follow us on Twitter. Follow us on Tumblr. Go to iTunes and leave us a 5-star review. We'll read it on an upcoming show, regardless of content.
As always, we love your emails. Send us an email at heyyouknowit@gmail.com with your comments, questions, and segment ideas. Emails will also be read on upcoming shows.
Please tell your friends about us, because you know we don't advertise. And let them know we can be found on iTunes, at Stitcher.com, and at heyyouknowit.com. Thanks.